The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. We kick off today's show in the Premier League. Liverpool taking on Arsenal, the defending champions, beating Arteta's side by 3-1. Here to discuss it, Don Hutchinson, Frank Leboeuf and Stevie Nicol. Stevie, Liverpool the best team in England and it's not even close, is it?
I tell you what, that first half, listen, forget the Robertson mistake. That first half, I mean, it was men against boys. Arsenal, you've got to give them credit. They had a real good shape and they had to have it, and they chased and they gave everything. But you know what? How do you play against a side that they can beat you up passing short, can beat you up passing long, can beat you up passing diagonally, can beat you up across the field? And they just made the game look so easy. And yes, absolutely. This was, although for the lack of a chance, this was one-sided, let's be honest.
It really was, in particular, as Stevie mentioned, that first half performance, exceptional, Frank.
Yeah, it was, and especially one guy, Van Dijk. I think the guy was doing everything he wanted, in fact, maybe because nobody was pressuring him. He launched some long passes, was so clinical. I mean, that was really amazing. But as Steve said, you know, we saw the superiority in every level from Liverpool. And Arsenal is lucky to be only 2-1 at halftime. It could have been really worse.
And I suppose Arsenal fans are there going, "Oi, I'll tell you what, though. How come Liverpool was so good? It's 3-1. If Lacazette takes his chance, it's 2-2 and it could be a different game, Don."
I think you're right, Dan. I think for Arsenal fans, I think they can be optimistic. I mean, listen, they were outclassed tonight. Let's not make no bones about it. I struggled to watch Arsenal when I was watching them play it from the back and taking chances. It was suicide football at times. But actually, they played some decent stuff. And when Ceballos come on, he started picking one or two passes. And you're right, he played that lovely little ball into Lacazette, who should have finished it. Then it would have been game on. But when you look at the bigger picture and the full 90 minutes, the way Liverpool at times were absolutely cruising, and Sadio Mane just keeps staying at a ridiculous level that he's playing at. He was easily the best player on the pitch, and Liverpool deserved all 3 points.
Mane, excellent, Stevie.
He must be thinking, why am I getting substituted? Because I was thinking it. I'm thinking, it's only 2-1, and as much as you're dominating and look as though you've got an extra gear, the game's not done. And you're taking off, as you said, the best player on the field. I found that a little strange. Now, it ends up, it's fine. Jota ends up getting a goal. And he's probably thinking, wow, I was only on the field for 20 minutes and I had 3 chances and scored 1. This is going to be great fun. But Mane, absolutely, fantastic.
Just going back to that Lacazette chance, Frank, you've got to take that.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, when you say Mane was the best player on the field, you know, you have to also name Alisson, because Alisson did what he had to do to stop Lacazette. And he won the two tête-à-tête that he had with Lacazette, and staying up until the last second. And he was absolutely fantastic. But I think we saw when Lacazette went out, when substituted, that he wasn't happy, of course, to get out. He wasn't happy about the fact that he scored the first goal. He was unhappy because he missed 2 big chances. So maybe one was offside, maybe. But the second one, he had to score. It was 2-1. It could have been 2-2. If he didn't miss that, and if David Luiz didn't kick the ball, the header, especially in the middle, maybe Arsenal could have gotten another result.
Stevie, you shouted at me yesterday. You said I needed to hold my horses because I was concerned from a neutral's point of view that Liverpool could run away with this league once again, given the Manchester City performance we saw yesterday. Do I still have to hold my horses?
Yeah, I think so. Listen, there's no question Liverpool are exceptional, but it is early. And so we should hold our horses. You know, I did say the problem was that line, and that's why Lacazette got in, because that line wasn't together. But listen, if we're going to ifs and ands about that, we can do it all day about the chances Liverpool had. So, yeah. No, Dan, clearly Liverpool are favourites, but it's a little early to say they're going to run away with it.
I just... There's just such a golfing quality, you feel, Dom, between them and everybody else. And I know that Everton have had a great start, Leicester as well, but it's difficult to see them maintaining this sort of level that you feel Liverpool will throughout this campaign.
Yeah, I mean, they're the full package. I mean, Everton are still trying to get where Liverpool want to be, and that might take them another couple of years. And teams like Leicester are pushing hard, sitting top of the table. So there's some good contenders and some good horses in the race. But when you think of where Liverpool are at and the strengthening that they've done, with Jota coming in and Minamino coming off the bench and Thiago not being in the squad because he wasn't match fit. I mean, they're just such an impressive unit. As Frank and Stevie were saying there, there's no real weaknesses. Even though Andy Robertson made a mistake, the only out I would give him is I think it took a slight deflection off Virgil van Dijk, who again was a rock at the back. And as Frank rightly said, you know, I think Sadio Mane, he'll get all the plaudits on social media. But Alisson, that's why Liverpool want to be at the top table when they went out and spent the money on Alisson, one of the best goalkeepers in the world, and then a record fee for Virgil van Dijk. It's where they want to be. They were just a little bit short at the time. But now you look at them and you think, well, they're 6 points ahead of Man City, which you think will be their closest rivals. Yes, City, you've got a game in hand. So already Liverpool are opening up a gap.
Yeah, where's the argument here, Frank, to say that Liverpool won't run away with it? Where's the weakness? Where could we see them dropping points?
Well, as I said before, when you asked me, you know, what I thought about Liverpool and if they will be again a champion, and I put them third, which I think I'm going to be wrong, but I made a bet and I tried something. But I think they can be blasé. Maybe they can think that it's already given and that they already won, and maybe they let it go. I mean, like they did just straight after the restart where they lost two silly games. Of course, if they are tuned in, if they keep on working like that, they're going to win, and they're going to win the league again and the Premier League again. But it's just up to them. If they're not tuned in, if they don't pay attention to what's going on, maybe they can get blasé again and lose the title. Otherwise, yeah, even Leicester is doing great. Everton is doing great. City is going to be back. So it's going to be a fight. I don't know what's going to happen to Chelsea and Manchester United. But the fight is just started. So you cannot say, oh, it's going to be an easy run for Liverpool, because we're far away from there. Lots of surprises, I guess, during the season, hopefully.
It's rare, isn't it, for considering what we saw this weekend. We're not really talking about officials, decisions, handballs or penalties. Although early on, Mane, could he have been sent off, do you think, Frank, for the old elbow?
Yeah, we've seen worst, and we've seen a red card for even less than that. So it could have been, because I didn't get what he said, what he did, sorry. He had something with Bellerin just before, and then elbowed the guy, I think it was Tierney, just after that. The ref could have given him a red card, and nobody would have said it's a scandal. So it's something like that. We can change a result.
Yeah.
Imagine they have a red card. What's going to happen? Maybe they don't win that game.
Don?
I think it's one of them, Dan, where if the referee had issued a red card, you wouldn't have really argued against the referee. I knew exactly what Sadio Mane was trying to do. Normally, when a defender's coming in on one side, you sort of try and fob him off a little bit, but he had the sort of fist clenched. I didn't think it was a red in the time. I thought it was a yellow. I was quite happy with the officials going with the yellow, but if it had been a red, I don't think there would have been any complaints.
Stevie?
Well, I think the referee got it right, but there are some referees who would have given a red card. You know, the ref got it right because his intention wasn't to catch Tierney across the side of the jaw, which he did. Now, that in itself, I guess you can argue, is a red card. He's put his arm out just to protect himself, because it looks like it's going to be a shoulder charge between the two of them. And of course, Tierney doesn't go for it. So I think the referee got it right, but I'm with Don. If he had given him a red, it would be hard to argue, because he did catch him on the side of his chin.
What's Arsenal's big takeaway from this, Don?
I think they could be semi-pleased. I think they want to be where Liverpool are at right now,
they're
Dan.
And
I think
a long way
under Mikel Arteta,
they're
getting there. Like, I think they're certainly trying. I see more defensive qualities in them. They're harder to beat. Their shape looks good when they play with three at the back and the two wing-backs and two holding midfield players protecting. It's, can they be a little bit more expansive when they're playing against the lesser sides? The industry's there. They don't carry any passengers anymore, Dan. I keep saying that when you watch Arsenal over the last decade, whenever they've played against teams against the top six, they're always carrying one or two passengers. Not tonight. I thought every single player put a shift in, and it was an honest shift.
all sounds a bit patronising to Arsenal, doesn't it, Stevie? Well done, you tried hard, you know, you're getting a bit better, people are trying.
Do you know, Dan, this is a real tough one. This is, you know, people go on about coaching being about, you know, tactics on the field and bringing players off and doing this and doing that, but it all carries on the plane, on the way home, and then the following day when you're coming in, how the manager, how the guy in charge is putting over what happened in this game. Because as a player, you'll be sitting there on the plane on the way back tonight and going, we got absolutely battered tonight. I'm absolutely shattered. Because you can see some of the Arsenal players were out on their feet because they got run around. And when you're doing so much defending, it absolutely sucks the life out of you. So this is when a lot of the stuff that people don't see about the coach's job. Is he going to be the rah-rah of how good they were together, how unlucky they were, how unlucky was Lacazette, a great save and we could have got a point, and are they all going to fall for it? So in the next couple of days, he's going to be in on his con.
Last word on this for you, Frank.
Well, you know, they can have regrets because they didn't do what they had to do. And that was my concern about William, and I'm gonna point the problem on him, where I think he touched like 8 balls, you know, in the first half. And he was the guy we didn't follow, Robertson, you know, on the cross from Alexander-Arnold, that we all know around the world that when Alexander-Arnold has the ball, Robertson goes for the far post. And you should be there. That was the problem when he was playing for Chelsea. He could be the best player in the world and disappear completely and not doing his defensive part of the job. But also, I think in the midfield, with the crazy suicide passes that they make in a 6-yard box, you know, from Leno to David Luiz with Holding, and where everybody starts sweating and everything, just to take that risk for at the end of the day giving it to a midfielder who is not capable of keeping the ball, just throwing a long ball where the three at front didn't get. Never gotten them. I think it's crazy. I don't know what Ceballos was on the bench, really. When he came, we felt the differences of technique and the fact that he could bring some good balls, the one he gave to Lacazette and some others. So there were some mistakes that they could have corrected and they didn't. But they have to change some stuff. Because it's not the way that I see Arsenal and I see the big club Arsenal playing.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. A lot more from Don, Frank and Stevie available over on our YouTube channel as they answer your tweets on Extra Time. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Big news for Manchester City fans today. Benfica have announced that they've agreed a deal with a club to sell them centre-back Ruben Dias. It's a lot of money. 68 million euros is the transfer fee for the 23-year-old. Jules and Gab talked about it a lot today on their podcast. Here's a clip.
Ruben Dias, it's a lot of money. I mean, even you got Otamendi going the other way. Yeah. That is a lot of money. Is this the answer?
It is the answer because I think he's a really good centre-back. He's better than everything they have right-footed, at least. So you would think Ruben Dias, Laporte is strong. He's good in the air. He's quite good on the ball. He defend going forward, which I think that's what they need. But it doesn't make sense in the sense that he's third choice. And maybe if you believe or not that they even inquired for Jimenez at Atletico, maybe even fourth choice. And I think a club like City should not go down to fourth option. Yeah. I think, you know, you should make the Koulibaly deal happening, if that's what, is that who you want. If you want Koundé and you make one offer that is rejected, why are you not coming back with another one? By the way, the first offer was much lower than the Ruben Dias deal, so why don't you go back and offer the same money that you offered for Ruben Dias for Jules Koundé, if it's really who you want. You see what I mean?
Like, that's
it's
really
a weird
strange one. Yeah.
You make one offer, they say no, you don't go back, and instead you go and buy someone who's quite different to Jules Koundé, to be honest, for more money, older, and maybe a bit more experienced because he's already
I mean, he's not a lot older. He's, what, 2 years older?
Yeah, 23 to 21. Yeah. He's a Portuguese right. international. Koundé is not. So I don't know. But the issue I have, and I like Ruben Dias, and I've seen him a lot, and there was a lot of clubs who liked him. I've got a problem with the Lindelof precedent, is that Lindelof was the best defender at Benfica and in Portugal at the time. No, but why are you rolling your eyes again at me?
It's a different players 5 years ago. It's a different
setting. Yeah, but we all thought, oh, Lindelof, that's a great signing. The guy looks so good in Portugal. Oh. He looks so good with Benfica.
Speak for yourself. No, he had about... No,
I think Ruben Dias is a better defender.
The key difference is Ruben Dias, I think, has been starting for the last 2 years. There's a much bigger body of work there with Ruben Dias at Benfica than there is with Lindelof. Lindelof, you were effectively buying potential.
But you are as well with Ruben Dias at 23.
I know, I'm sorry, I should have warned you about Gab's legs before that clip.
And the shorts.
My God.
Apparently they're the same shorts that Jordan wore in The Last Dance. There you go. Frank and Todd with us to discuss Dias. And the great thing is, and what I love about you, Frank, is like, I've never seen him play. I've never heard of him. Do you want me to lie? Is the WhatsApp message you sent to me. And this is the thing, isn't it? Because he is a bit of an unknown. We obviously know Koulibaly. We've seen him at Umbegano as well. Don, you watched him on YouTube today.
I did, because I commentated on the Champions League a couple of years back, and I just had to try and refresh my memory on the player that I watched. I sort of agree with Julian, really. When players come out of the Portuguese League and you drop them into the Premier League, even though they cost a lot of money, you know, it's not easy. It's not like you look at the size of the transfer fee and how well he's been doing and then say, right, can you come and start for Man City, by the way? And can you come and keep clean sheets? I mean, Sebastián Coates was... You know, couldn't get a game for Liverpool for love and the money. He made loads of mistakes in the Premier League. Then he went back to Portugal and looked a really good centre-half. So there's massive differences between the style and how quick the Premier League is compared to the Portuguese League. He's a good defender. What I have seen and what I remember about him, Dan, he's quite aggressive. He likes to sort of step into centre-forwards. He doesn't take a sort of yard back and he lets them turn. He really is aggressive. He likes to tackle and he's decent on the ball. But he ain't going to just walk into Man City right here, right now, and City are going to just click like that. It's going to take him a little period of time to get going.
But the problem with that is, Frank, is they need him to click like that. We saw how vulnerable they were at the back against Leicester. They need somebody to come in and just hit the ground running. But this guy is going to be very much under the microscope for such a big transfer fee and such expectations. And given, as Jules rightly said, he wasn't the number one target.
Well, we're going to give a chance to the product, as we said. You know, we maybe he's going to click like that. And but you're right, it's an emergency. Manchester City desperately needs a very, very good central defender. So maybe he is. We're going to give a chance. I don't know him, and I have to be honest, that's true. Never heard of him, never seen him playing, you know, because I watched the Premier League, the Bundesliga, the Liga, the League One, the Calcio, but never watched the Portuguese Championship. And I didn't follow Benfica in the Champions League. So it's hard to have an opinion with him. So I don't want to be disgraceful. I don't want to be critical. I'm going to say maybe because Guardiola and all the scouts, they know football. They find the pearl. But I know Koundé, I know Koulibaly, and I know that those players, they were capable of giving the best to Manchester City quickly. So again, good chance to Dias, but big pressure on him because I think the future of Manchester City will depend on him adapting to the Premier League very, very quickly.
Yeah, the problem is Manchester City haven't really unearthed many pearls when it comes to the defensive line when you take a look at the money they've spent on.
I mean, listen, I don't think the Jimenez transfer was ever going to happen, so I'm not quite sure that he was fourth choice because I think Atletico Madrid were demanding about 120 million euros, which City were never going to pay. But I think you're right, Dan. I think the pressure's on him now because of the size of the transfer fee, and City have probably overpaid by about 20 million euros just to get him through the door. He adds a bit of balance because, as we know, Nathan Aki's a lefty. Laporta left footer as well, so he has that balance where he can play on the right. It might even see a complete change in shape now from Guardiola. He might even start playing three at the back with maybe Kyle Walker as a wing back on the right side and Benjamin Mendy on the left side. So we'll have to wait and see, but he is going to have to hit the ground running. If he signs within the next couple of days, you know, the pressure is certainly going to be on because everyone is going to, you know, look at him and think, right, what is he all about? Is he going to be mistake-free? We look at Thiago Silva, who's been a sensational defender for well over a decade, gets in the Chelsea side, makes a mistake on match day one for him. Seriously, now he's even under pressure.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. A lot more from the Gab and Jules podcast. Just a reminder, we saw the clip there. The whole episode available to listen to now over on the website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
The Bundesliga returned in fine style, and having produced no less than 36 goals on the opening weekend, it's now time to pop the cork for match day two. Finds Rorda. Little pocket of space, edge of the area. Oh, Sebastian Rorda! It's gone beautifully. The header from Felix Udokai puts Augsburg in front. Well held. Caligiuri on his 300th Bundesliga appearance adds a second to Augsburg's total.
We win against Dortmund. Yeah, this is the best result we can get, and we're very happy.
The header is a looping one and in. And this is the chance. Oh, it's got to be, and it is. Josip Brekalo with an absolute banger on the stroke of half time to Paul Wolfsburg level. The corner's good. Started with a header, and Füllkrug puts Bremen ahead. A sucker punch for Schalke. Schalke beaten for the 18th match running in the Bundesliga.
As always in the last games, we do like children mistakes, and this is not possible. We have to change it. We have to learn.
Options left and right. Here is Forsberg. It's Emil Forsberg! He's opening up for Timmy Bay! Oh, wow! Oh, Rudolf de Boer makes it two with a delicate chip! Neuer on his own. Neuer concedes again. And it's Andre Kramaric. Hoffenheim do to Bayern what Bayern do to so many teams.
What a weekend it was then in the Bundesliga. And as we all predicted, Hoffenheim then top of the table, two wins out of two, as we welcome in Steve Cherundolo and Archie Rintat to the show. Archie, let's talk about, shall we, Hoffenheim's demolition of Bayern, which is exactly what it was. Obviously, you could offer up the excuse that, yes, they played in the Super Cup earlier in the week. This was just a hangover. But it's got to be more to it, isn't there?
There is. For a start, Hoffenheim went with a back five and closed all the space that Schalke did not on the opening match day. I thought that was a very important tactical move. And also, when it came to their build-up play, I was at the game in March when Bayern thrashed them by 6-0. And back then, when Alfred Schroeder was the coach, you saw Hoffenheim still trying to play out from the back, which, with this Bayern side and the way they press, is a recipe for disaster. So what they were doing instead is they were happy to go long and wait for the second ball and see if they could play something on the counter-attack there. And that actually worked pretty well for them. I think they picked on also one of the very few weaknesses of Bayern, which is set pieces. We saw them struggle a little bit from them last season. Martin Hinteregger's double for Eintracht Frankfurt comes to mind in particular. But all in all, okay, Thomas Müller said that Bayern shouldn't be using tiredness as an excuse. He said that he still thought they had enough energy. But I think you do have to credit Hoffenheim and the fact that coach Sebastian Hoeneß, who was Bayern's second team coach and won the third division with them last season, the fact that he had a year-long's worth of weekly conversations with Hansi Flick, perhaps that paid off in the end.
Well, let's just remind you the significance of this victory for Hoffenheim. Bayern coming into it in that 23-game winning streak, 32 matches unbeaten in all competitions. Their last loss was back in 2019 against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Steve, what do you think? Just a hangover, or as Archie suggests, maybe a couple of cracks there?
Well, it was going to happen eventually. After we see they go on such a stretch like that for 23 games, it's inevitable that you're going to lose one along the road. But I really have to say that Bayern Munich did not just lose this game. They came out with a good mentality. They didn't play poorly. They didn't show signs of fatigue. You really have to say Hoffenheim had an outstanding performance, both mentally, tactically, technically, and physically as well. It was the right recipe to play against this Bayern Munich defense. We saw some things from Bayern Munich that we've seen in the past. They are very successful to a counterattack. Their center backs with Alaba and Boateng aren't the fastest anymore. They're towards the end of their careers. And those three players up top, Baumgartel, Kramaric, and De Boer, found some really good spots underneath that and were very tough to handle. So I hope everybody watching on took their notes, and this is definitely a recipe on how to beat Bayern Munich.
Meanwhile, do we find the recipe how to beat Borussia Dortmund, Steve? We were so excited after the first week with all that young, exciting talent that Jan was on at the weekend. He described it quite nicely as quite literally it was men versus boys.
Yeah, I think Augsburg did a fantastic job, especially physically. They won all of their battles. They played a straight-up 4-4-2. But that second four of a line of midfield was very tight and very narrow. And Borussia Dortmund just tried to jam it down the middle for the entire first half and got nothing. On top of that, Augsburg did a fantastic job of taking away any depth or depth play that Borussia Dortmund tried. They were deep in their own half. And again, they were strong on the counter. So, one of the things other teams looking on to Dortmund, I find that, their flank play has not been good. It was not very effective. And if you push them to the flanks, I think you're going to have good chances to counter against them and to keep a clean sheet.
It's complete and utter deja vu, Archie, from what we saw last season. From a coaching perspective, is there nothing... Could they have done something different within this match?
We say deja vu, except in 2020 under Lucien Favre, what we have seen is once they went to a back three... at the back end of last year, in November, things did improve for them. And in the calendar year, they started the Bundesliga with 12 out of 14 wins. So they're reverting right back to the first half of last season here, before they had Erling Haaland. And it is deja vu, because we've seen this kind of tame performance from Dortmund. But I do think that Augsburg deserve credit for the way that they closed the space. I think against all teams, you need to close that central area the most. But particularly against Lucien Favre, who has certain rules for his players in terms of where they can shoot, you have to crowd that area right in front of goal. And every time that Dortmund got on the ball in that area around the box, there was a forest of white players that they had to find the way through. So I do give credit to Augsburg here. Julian Nagelsmann was saying that we can't always expect that the big side is going to roll over the underdogs. And I think he's got a point here as well, because it says a lot for the way that Augsburg set up that you can be as effective and efficient as they have been with only 20% possession.
Going forward, Steve, what does Lucien Favre have to do to stop this from happening again?
Well, one of the disappointing things about their performance in this game was, to me, that there were no changes at halftime. And I think something that Bayern Munich does extremely well is they find depth in their game. So that one of the number eights running through, whether it's a Goretzka or it's a Thomas Müller, who's always testing the opponent's back line. And Borussia Dortmund did not do any of that. They played wide, but they failed to get in behind Augsburg's back line. And I think that's one of the tactical changes that Lucien Favre could make is could put another center midfielder in, an attacking center midfielder, and really make some deep runs and pushing that back line even further back and exposing them even more.
Just going back to what you said before, Archie, why doesn't Lucien Favre like them shooting? Isn't that how you score goals?
It's not liking them shooting. It's from specific areas. It's why he's said to be one of these coaches that defies expected goals. I believe that's Craig Burley's favourite mechanism.
So you're only allowed to shoot from certain parts of the pitch?
Yeah. That's not just certain... It's certain places in the attacking third that he wants them, or in certain situations that he wants them to shoot. I think it's as much to do with, is there going to be, how many players are between you and the goal at the time? And to be fair, it's got Dortmund pretty far, but I can understand the frustration, because particularly the noises that were coming out of the Dortmund camp after this game, Mats Hummels saying that it was actually a good performance. Lucien Favre said on the whole it was as well. And yet, what does it count for if you're not ultimately winning? It's a bit of a bugbear I have generally with the Bundesliga right now, is that there's not enough shots from distance. Everything is such good, or is so full of combination play, that sometimes you just want to see someone hit it from 30 yards. Because if you're a top team, you've got the quality to do that a lot of the time. You look at Bayern's first goal, or Bayern's only goal against Hoffenheim, for example. It was Joshua Kimmich with a snapshot from distance. And he's good enough to do that. And I think that a little bit more variability from Dortmund outside of the Favre plan would maybe benefit.
Steve, would you really listen, though, to the coach to that extent? If I want to shoot, I'll shoot.
I agree. I have made that mistake as well, of shooting when I wasn't supposed to. I had got a near fall and a half. But I agree. I think there are times where you do shoot. And what happens is, when you do shoot from distance, the next time you're gonna pull a defender out, and you're going to open spaces in behind, and maybe some pockets up to play the pass into next time. So it's really keeping yourself variable on the field. You need to shoot from distance to keep the defense honest, but you also need to play balls behind them to keep them honest as well. So it's a bit of both.
We'll be keeping a close eye as to whether or not there will be any shots from distance in the Super Cup, which, of course, is this week. Bayern taking on Borussia Dortmund. Archie, are people excited by this in Germany?
Yes-ish. Because there's a lot of... That's not what I meant to say, is it? Look, there's a lot of games right now, and I think that from a Bayern point of view, it's how can they manage it physically when Hansi Flick has not had the new signings come in that he was expecting from Hasan Salihamidžić. It is an exciting prospect, particularly from a Dortmund point of view, because you know they're going to get more space to run into than they would have got against Augsburg at the weekend. And I have to say, to be honest, the best half of football I've seen in the last year was the Dortmund-Bayern game that we had back over the summer, mm-hmm. Which ultimately decided the Bundesliga title. So I think it is going to be exciting to see how Dortmund react and Bayern too, because you could tell, for example, that Thomas Müller was really smarting after that. And I think as well, I can't remember Alphonso Davies having as bad a game as that for Bayern yet. So he's got to find his rhythm. I'm looking forward to seeing how he comes back and rises to the challenge, particularly because Müller has said a little bit in the past now that if Alphonso Davies drops off his game, Müller will be there to chevy him along and be like, hey, what's up here? So I think there's quite a few interesting battles to look out for.
Especially considering what happened to both sides this weekend, Steve, I suppose that set things up quite nicely, actually, for this game on Wednesday.
I agree, but I do think in this particular game, Borussia Dortmund have more to lose than Bayern Munich. I think everybody expects Bayern to win, and they are in better form if we just kind of take a performance away on the weekend. And I do expect Bayern to win this game and quite handily. Although, Archie, you have a point to say that Dortmund will have more room on the counterattack. They are extremely good on the counterattack. They have their players suit that. It's more of a younger squad, and they have more creativity and freedom to break down the creativity on the counterattack. And the other thing we have to see too is, this five in the back that Borussia Dortmund now plays with, without three, and then when they defend without the ball five, really sucks out those outside backs of Bayern Munich. And a young Alphonso Davies isn't quite sure yet, do I go, do I stay? And that space in behind him is being exposed. It was against Hoffenheim, and if Borussia Dortmund do their homework right, I'm sure they'll look at that and try to send some players in that open space.
Well, Archie mentioned it, Bayern Munich maybe not making the reinforcements to the squad that they were hoping to. Serginho Dest, of course, heavily linked to a move to Bayern, however, heading to Barcelona, according to reports. Steve, do you like this move for him?
I think for him it's smart, and I think any big move for younger players, it's extremely important to get games. And I know at both clubs it would be difficult for him to get games, but you know, having a Dutch coach and somebody who played for Ajax and knows the club very well may give him the benefit of the doubt to get on the field. You know, once he's on the field, it's up to him to stay there. But I do think it's a good move, great for American soccer, and obviously great for Serginho Dest.
Just a couple of other points that we saw this weekend. Steve, no surprise, David Wagner gone at Schalke.
No surprise. I think, you know, the front office there was put under extreme pressure after that first performance against Bayern Munich and very similar stuff against Werder Bremen. You know, I think once you go into a new season, you have a 7 to 8 week preseason and you think all of your troubles are gone, and then your team shows up the first 2 weeks of the Bundesliga and does the exact same thing, then you really have to start questioning the coach and his methods. So there was nothing they could have done to keep him. I think it was the inevitable move. But like I said, we don't have a crystal ball to know if it was the right move. I guess we'll just have to wait and find out.
Archie, 16 matches without a win going into the start of the season. It was a mistake to keep him, wasn't it? Why didn't they get rid of him before?
Because it would have been too expensive. The fact is, Schalke are in real financial trouble right now, and letting him run down his contract by a couple more months over the summer has saved them a little bit of cash. And given the fact that Schalke needed a 40 million euro bailout over the summer to help them keep afloat, it tells you how much financial pressure they're under. Add to that, that David Wagner had no choice but to bring back players into the fold, such as Ralf Fährmann, the goalkeeper who went on loan to Norwich and didn't play last season. Mark Hoot, striker. Sebastian Rudi, who has really not looked great any time he's been in a Schalke shirt. You add to that Nabil Bentaleb, who has... you can't really count the moments, the good moments that he's had in a Schalke shirt in the last 2 years, really. And Stephen Skripski. Now, these are four of these five players are now being made into key players in the squad. And yet, last year, David Wagner says to these players, "You're not good enough for me, you're going away." You've got to be able to really forge some sort of new connection and really hold your hands up and say, "You know what, I got it wrong then, and I really need you now." And I just didn't see that from the Schalke side. I was at the game on Saturday, and the way that their heads went down after the first goal, it was so quiet there. And even when Schalke scored their consolation goal, there was one clap, a solitary clap from a support staff member, and the music is blaring, and it just felt so incredibly awkward. The writing was on the wall. You knew that he was gone.
Who's worse, Archie? Fulham or Schalke? final point. What's going on at Mainz, Archie?
Good question. So last week, Adam Solai, journeyman Bundesliga striker, he was banished to the Mainz second team for sporting reasons. Basically, he and Achim Beilort, so the coach, didn't see eye to eye. But what nobody expected was the Mainz players to strike that Wednesday and refuse to train in support of Solai. So we then had this very bizarre situation this weekend where the sporting director was saying, look, it was a very unpleasant situation, but ultimately Mainz threw in the towel against Stuttgart. The way that they lost by 4-1, and you see the players all awkwardly standing around by Alorzer as he's giving a team talk after the game. It's been going wrong for a while there. And Bayerlotzer, I have to say, he is, by all intents and purposes, one of the nicest guys that you will meet in professional football. But he just does not command the respect of a top-tier dressing room. I think that that has been a real problem for him. And it's his inability to be able to control the dressing room dynamics that Mainz has done for him.
That's it. Thank you very much, guys. Archie, you're moving house. Will you be stealing that strawberry from the flatmate? That's what we want to know. Will you be leaving it there?
I'll be leaving the strawberry.
The strawberry will stay. It is official. Gentlemen, thank you very much. And just a reminder, Wednesday then, it's Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund in the German Super Cup. And then, of course, a full round of matches as we approach week 3 in this season's Bundesliga.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. Don is with us, as is Frank and Stevie Nicol as well, answering your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Don and Frank with us, as is Stevie Nicol, celebrating his first ever hole-in-one by wearing a very shiny T-shirt today. What a moment, Stevie.
Yeah, that was my prize.
Yeah?
That was my prize for winning.
Let's boogie night. I think it's quite all right.
The best part for Stevie and your hole-in-one was that the bar was shut and you didn't have to buy anyone a drink, I understand, Mr. Nicol.
Yeah, golf club, the bar was shut. cost me zero, nothing.
Right then, lots of tweets about the discussion we had over the last couple of days about the handball rule. Why does Stevie not think players will start hitting it at players' arms to cheat? We already started seeing it, and it's the same as diving, deceiving the referee.
Well, you got.
Thank you.
You've got to remember, particularly in the Premier League, the game's played at such a pace that you think players have got time to go, oh, hold on a wee second, I know what I'll do. I'll kick it out of his hand.
They will, Stevie.
Sorry.
They will.
Oh, shush.
I'm telling you, got a crystal ball. That tweet is absolutely bang on.
Have you got players a crystal ball?
Players will start kicking it off defenders'
hands. I'll tell you what. If I'm coaching a team, right, and I've got me player, and he's in the penalty box, and he tries to hit something in the hand and kicks it away wider to goal, I'm going to go, hey, what are you doing?
If you do realise the 80-yard box is quite big.
Yeah.
Frank, where do you stand on this?
We're going to start kicking it out of them.
Will players start purposely kicking the ball at players' arms?
I think some will. Some will do, and some has done that, you know, because I've seen some games where you say, why the guy is just kicked like that? You know, did he try to do it on purpose? And I think a couple of times I saw that the players was aiming.
Yeah, right. Come on, then, name the game.
Players' hands.
Tell me when you saw it.
I don't know if it was a League One game or a game that you didn't see, because we have fantastic football here around France, you know. And I saw a guy was trying in the 6-yard box.
No, League One, box, the guy was probably having a shot and it went straight to the guy's hand. That's what happened.
Well, we cannot talk, though.
Stevie said yesterday that if a player is more than 1 metre away, then it should be a penalty. This was the yardstick he was using. Stevie, would your 1 metre away handball rule need to have exceptions? A player in the Roma-Juventus game was a very close distance away, but his hand was in a very unnatural position.
Mm. That's an excellent question, Dan. An excellent question. Oh, and don't get me wrong, this is... this is a suggestion to try and get closer to having less controversy every week. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying that this is the answer. I'm just saying it's something that could be looked into. And I hadn't thought of that. You know, if you're closer than a metre away and it hits you in the hand because your hand's up here. But now you've asked me the question, I would have to say, you know what? Again, to make it clear to everybody, the answer is, regardless of where your hands are, if you're less than a metre away, then it's not a penalty.
What if you're on the goal line?
How are you going to police that, Steve? Are you going to get like a VAR measuring stick for a metre? What if it's a metre and an inch?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether you've noticed, but they've got all the measuring devices in VAR that you could wish for. So are you telling me they couldn't measure a distance between two players? I'm sure they could. And again, I'm not saying this is the answer to Pythagoras' theorem. I'm just saying this is an option that will take away controversy. And whether some people like the idea or not, it takes away all the controversy. It just makes it a flat rule. And then after that, nobody can argue.
Pythagoras' theorem.
What is the answer to Pythagoras' theorem, Stevie?
I haven't figured that one out either.
A metre.
But Stevie, what if he's on the goal line and he's within in a yard, but it hits his hand because it's in an unnatural position?
Right. And listen, it's not going to be completely infallible. There are going to be a situation like a guy and anybody with half an ounce of brains, which I'm not so sure you have. If that happens to the guys on the goal line, then it's a penalty kick.
Right.
So, no, but I think I will just try to be Stevie's lawyer.
You're just trying to be clever, as usual.
Yeah. Football is not. There is no only one rule in football, and at the end of the day, it's always the referee decision and the interpretation of the game. So if the ref feels that the guy is doing it on purpose, even if he's on the line and he's 1 yard or less than a yard, you have to give a penalty. If it's even a natural, but you see that the ball goes straight to his hand, it shouldn't be a penalty because the guy can't put his hand out. That's up to the ref to decide. But in order to do that, you have to understand football. So you have to be used to football, so you have to play football. If you're a ref and you never played football, you will never get the game.
That's a bit of an issue, isn't it?
Dan, quiz question for you. I read an article today about David Ellery, who's in charge of one of the governing bodies, and he's been in charge for 4 years. How many rule changes do you think he's made in 4 years?
63.
Dan, you go first.
63.
Many? 63.
I say 63. Stephen?
Oh, is this a quiz?
Apparently. Don's taken over.
Go on. How many rule changes, law changes, have David Ellery made in 4 years?
15.
15. Frank?
Frank doesn't care.
Un, deux.
33.
Well, 33.
Frank, un, deux.
50. Try 200.
Oh.
200.
What?
200 in 4 years.
Can you name them all, Don? Go.
No, I couldn't name you more than four.
I didn't know there was that many.
No, it's rubbish ones. Half of them are rubbish ones. Like, wouldn't bother yourself with them. But 200.
Oh. Well, that still leaves 200.
Right, we'll edit that out, I think. Right, is it harsh to criticise Pep for the defeat to Leicester when many of his key players are unavailable and this was Man City's third match in 6 days without any pre-season to it as well? Frank, what do you think?
Did we have no...
Well, you have to be ready to Leicester first. Can I talk? Can you say to the guys talking in the middle of the question?
It's Stevie, Frank. It's not me. Stevie.
Sorry, Frank.
I know, Stevie. He's a changed man.
No, really, I think you have to give credit to Leicester. I mean, the game they offered to the fans has been absolutely fantastic. But it's true. It's hard to make a statement, you know, after 2 days. Two games, you know, in the Premier League. We have to wait before judging everybody. So I want to give credit to Pep and the fact that, I mean, it's hard for him to compose with all the problems that he has inside the squad. And I'm sure he's going to rectify everything and City will try to chase Liverpool.
Wait, he didn't rectify it last year, Frank. He had plenty of time to do
well,
that.
Well, no. Of course not, but I think he learned his lesson.
We clearly didn't learn his lesson. Vardy got a hat trick yesterday again.
No, but I mean, we have a new signing, so we have to wait for the new signing to make sure the defense is going to get better.
Right.
We've been waiting for that.
But all his other signings have been terrible.
Change everything.
Well, they just signed that kid.
Okay, so you've got all the questions and all the answers. So do the show. What can I say? Do the show. No,
I've just got the answers, Frank.
Oh dear. Right.
Yeah.
With the early struggle of some of the top Premier League teams, can Everton finish in the top six this season? Oh, top six. Is that exciting? Don?
Who are you asking? Do I have to go there on predictions again after I predicted West Ham would finish in the top four last season? Of course Everton can try and hope for the top six. Of course they can.
No.
Why not, Frank?
No, I don't believe it. I don't believe it because I think everybody's going to wake up. So the team who are a little bit sloppy right now is going to wake up. And you see that Leicester is there. So I see the same, almost the same team that we saw last season finishing on top six. And Everton just after.
Stevie?
I'll tell you what, it's tough. Listen, I guess we can only go by what we've seen, and I kind of agree with Frank that it's a lot different after three games and it will be after 23 because they don't give prizes out right now. But what Everton have shown us is that if they continue to keep that standard up, then they can get in the top six, no question. They've been as good as Spurs, they've been as good as Arsenal, they've been as good as Leicester. So, if they keep playing the way they are, then they can do it.
What has happened to Wolves and Sheffield United, Don, this season? Do their performances prove how hard it is to maintain a consistent result in the Premier League?
Yeah, maybe second season syndrome, especially for Chrissy Wilder's men, Dan. I mean, they've not even scored a goal yet.
Wow.
So, they're struggling, and they need to get going quickly because I think they'll be okay. I don't think Sheffield will be in a relegation battle. I think they'll get going over the coming weeks. And I think Wolves will be okay. I thought Wolves at the start of the season would have been one of the teams that would finish in the top six. But a shaky start from Nuno's men, but I still think they'll be okay.
For Don, would you rather have your friend Frank win the Premier League or West Ham finish in the top four?
Oh, Frank to win the Premier League. I love West Ham, but now I'm sort of getting quite close to Frank. I quite like him. I think he's got something about him. His dress sense is good. He puts Steve in his place every now and again. He's a bit crazy, so if he gets a medal, I'm happy.
Yeah? Frank Lampard over West Ham.
I thought you were talking Frank.
No.
I thought we were talking Frank in the middle.
No, what do you mean? How's Frank going to win the Premier League?
Frank
Look at the state
Lampard.
Of him. He's old.
Edit that, Dan. Get rid of that.
Edit another one. Get rid of that awful quiz question and his awful answer.
I just thought because I seen Frank, I thought it was Frank.
Why?
Yeah, you're right. There is only one Frank. There is only one Frank, and
Frank,
it's me.
Frank's not even your friend. He's your colleague.
I'd like to think we're getting closer. That's why I said. That's why I thought it was a strange question. But I thought, well, I'm not going to begrudge Frank a chance of winning the Premier League. Happy days.
How's he going to win the Premier League? Look at him.
Edit all of it.
You don't know.
I just said, edit that off. Get rid of everything.
I can be the coach of any clubs next season and win the Premier League.
You don't know the future of anybody. Okay, do the boys think they could be as successful in the modern game as they were back in their era? Well, that's a good question.
Easy.
Yeah? No problem?
Easy.
Yes, even better.
Even better?
Yeah, because we know how to defend.
Yeah, Stevie?
Most defenders don't know how to defend.
Steve, do you think you would be the same?
Absolutely.
Do you think you would have the same, like, the same diet?
Well, I would because I would have been brought up differently.
Right.
Like guys are brought up now, you know, kids are joining academies at 8 and 9 years old, Dan. They're getting all this stuff thrown at them from 8 and 9 years old. So, yeah, absolutely. If the three of us were thrown in and brought up to to do all the things they are doing now, we'd be faster, stronger. You can't take ability away. So if you put the strength and the fitness and all the other stuff together and the speed, then absolutely we'd be successful.
Yeah, be rich
pitches,
as well.
Pitches were rotten in our day, Dan.
Say
pitches
again,
were
Don?
Terrible.
Aye, that wouldn't be bad, aye.
You'd have lots of money. Go on, Don, what were you saying?
No, I'm just saying the pitches in our day were terrible. So we had to learn to try and play when it was muddy, when it was sandy. You look at the pitches these days, they're absolute carpets. We would have been a lot more professional. Me and Stevie wouldn't have had our nights out on a Tuesday with a day off. Coming in on Thursday, maybe with a slight hangover. So the kids that are playing now, the fellas that are playing now, they are supreme athletes. And I'd back all us three to be a lot better in the current climate than we were in our day.
Do you think it would be as much fun though, Stevie?
Absolutely, 100% not.
No.
I'd be absolutely stinking rich and miserable.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. Did you want to say something, Frank?
No, it's just because I see some. Do you know what I was, you know, how do you say, designed as a designated as a soft defender because I wasn't strong enough. But when I see some defenders in the Premier League, and I will never name anybody, you know, you can just see a few. We did a good career in England where they are half. Or even twice softer, I would say, than I was at the time, and they had a decent career in England. It says to you how the Premier League changed comparing to my time, but also Stevie and just before Don time.
In light of the international break coming up, Don, does Stevie, Frank and Don as pundits hate the international break as much as most fans do?
I do. Listen, it's difficult because, you know, when you play for your country, and I was lucky enough to play for Scotland 26 times and Stevie a lot more than I do, they were precious times going away and playing. But now that you analyse the game, it doesn't seem the same standard. And then as soon as that week's sort of gone, you're itching for the Premier League to come back.
Frank, do you like the international break?
No. As a pundit?
Yes.
As a pundit? No. No, I don't like. I mean, it's boring. The competition, all the games, mostly very boring. I'm waiting for the World Cup, European Championship. Mm-hmm. But what I see and what we saw like a fortnight ago, I mean, not interested at all.
The Nations League, obviously available on ESPN Plus, Stevie. I know you do like that.
Oh, I love the Nations League.
Yes, good.
Absolutely.
I changed my mind. I love it too.
Well, listen, there's one thing you can't argue. At least now we kind of see some competitiveness in the internationals, because what the Nations League has done is, well, they've turned it into competition, whereas before they were just friendly. So, you know, you could tell that A, half the players weren't particularly interested in being there, and B, the crowds, there was no crowds. No, there's no crowds now because of the pandemic, but even when they were allowed in, they wouldn't turn up because people had lost interest in it. So, listen, the Nations League has given us a little bit of something to grasp onto, but international football is still way, way, way away from how important it used to be.
Almost.
I don't agree with Stevie. When you play for your country, I don't understand that you can think that you have a friendly game, so it's not very interesting and not very important. When you play for your country, you play for your color, you play for your flag, you have to give 100%. I mean, you can understand playing for your club, like Frank. Liverpool playing against Lincoln, with all due respect, sorry, let me finish. With all due respect, it's a little bit boring for the Liverpool player to play against Lincoln. But when you play for the national team, even if you play against a so-called small country, you play for your country. Mm. You have to win for your country. So even if it's a friendly, you have to play at the max. I never understood that when players were saying, well, it's a friendly, I don't want to be part of it. Don't go to the national team. Don't play for your country if it's like that. I don't agree with that. I'm sorry.
Frank, how many games did you play when there was less than 100 million people at the game for France? During your time, the international game was extremely popular.
That's true.
I'm telling you now, it's not. and to turn up with no crowd and get your juices flowing, it's not quite as easy as when there's what, 60 to 80,000 people in the stadium.
Well, I understand that during the pandemic, but I'm sorry, but I follow France or I follow England or I follow Germany every time they play in a full crowd. But I still hear the players saying, well, you know, but they don't say it publicly, but I hear from friends of a friend, yeah, he doesn't want to play, he didn't want to, he said he was injured because he didn't want to play against, I don't know, Albania, because it wasn't friendly. Yeah. That.
Don, do you hate Scotland as much as Stevie does?
No, but just to try and put some perspective on it, when I was playing for Scotland, we came up against New Zealand, which was like just the most ridiculous game ever, and we actually lost the game, which was even more ridiculous under Bertie Vokes. But the weekend after, you've got a really important Premier League game and a really six-pointer when you're trying to get into Europe, and you've got to try and put everything into playing Scotland versus New Zealand. It's like, I understand what Frank said and I agree with what he's saying to a point, but you're never playing at your max because you're scared that you might just get a knock or get an injury in the bigger game. You ain't going to put everything into playing against New Zealand. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, Don, I agree with you and I can understand that. But at the end of the day, you put shame on Scotland, on your country, on your team, on your national team, because you lost against New Zealand. Yeah, but no, but that's the truth. And I'm sorry, you have to agree with me. And you have Scottish fans, you know, say, well, they don't respect our team. You know, it's what I just said. You know, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I would probably have done the same because you have an important game 5 days after.
Finally, if Frank could suggest any French wine to go with Stevie's shepherd's pie, what would it be?
No, I don't know if I want to waste a good wine for a shepherd's pie.
No. Stevie, you don't... You don't like wine, Stevie, no?
You don't like wine on top of it?
No.
Oh, my God.
Don't get it.
There is
I don't
a fantastic...
See the point.
There is a fantastic... my God. Now, you have Bordeaux. Some Bordeaux and Bourgogne will go very well with your shepherd's pie. Not very expensive.
Beautiful. Actually. What's the point?
So, Frank, I've got a question for you.
Tell me.
Frank, would you have a white or a red with red meat?
Always a red with red meat. And now you're allowed with fish to have also red wine, even if it's before it was only white. But now you're allowed to have some reds.
I like a bit. I like a bit of fish.
But never a white wine with a red meat. Never. That's insulting the wines.
Oh, there we go. Don, okay.
I'll
see the point of wine?
I mean, listen, I remember having a glass of wine years ago and I put some ice in my wine and someone went absolutely mental at me.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, you can do that on the rosé. Now you can do that on the rosé, but you never do that on the red wine, you know.
Yeah, but I like it cold, Frank. I like my wine cold, so it was warm. And I was like,
you don't drink red wines cold. It's 12 degrees between 12 and 15 degrees. The red wine, but never cold.
I didn't have a thermometer.
Maybe
at the time. I just guessed it was too warm.
But what if you're sitting outside and it's 90 degrees outside?
Put some ice in it.
You drink a beer. I don't know, drink water, drink soda, whatever. But don't drink.
Put some ice in it and have a nice well-done steak while you're there.
Oh, yeah. Frank, you're talking to two people who have their God. Steak well done.
Put a bucket of ice, will you? This wine's boiling.
Oh, goodness me. What a crazy old extra time. That's it. Thank you very much. We'll edit all that stuff out, Don. Don't worry. We'll be back here tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.
Hey, don't put the Champs-Élysées on. Frank will be standing at attention.
Vive la France! Féroce soldat. Voilà, vive la France!